Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is finding the sweet spot. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want, thriving in any area of your life, just exploring going deeper into the inside-out understanding are 866-254-1579. That's toll-free in the United States and Canada. 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-944-4300. And before I set the table, because I always like to set the table before we start talking, but I want to just take a minute to just say a thank you and farewell to my colleague here at Hay House Radio, Dr. Wayne Dyer. I used to have a copy of the book Your Erroneous Zones. And it was a little before my time. So it was a beat up copy. I started working in this field in the 80s. And I ran a bookshop in London called The Mystic Trader. And we used to have, all the new books. And I think Gifts from Icus and things like that were Wayne's current books. But I just always remember I had this old beat up copy of Your Erroneous Zones. And for years, I was embarrassed about it because I thought it said Your Erogenous Zones. I thought it was a sex book. I didn't really know who Wayne Dyer was. And then when I sort of saw his newer books coming into The Mystic Trader, I went back and read that book and was just really struck by an original voice and had no sense at that point that I would ever be involved in this field or that, in fact, I would ever meet him or, as actually ultimately happened, that I would actually share a stage with him and be his opening act for a gig at Wembley Arena in London, which was it was sort of my first big gig with Hay House. And so, you know, Wayne, I think I'm speaking for an awful lot of people when I wish you well on wherever this next adventure takes you. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. What we're here to talk about today is finding the sweet spot. And if you've ever played tennis or golf or any sort of racket sport, you know, the sweet spot is the optimal place to hit the ball. It's true in baseball. There's a place where when you hit the ball in that place from that place, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It's not, you get more bang for your buck than just the force of your swing. Bat itself, the intrinsic structure of the bat or the club or the racket helps the hit. And so it not only feels effortless, it goes farther, it flies truer, it comes off the bat more perfectly than you could have done through strength of will or skill alone. Well, that sweet spot is available to us in life as well. There is a sweet spot in how we approach our life, in how we live our life, such that what comes in seemingly at us comes back out from us with a perfection that's beyond just our skill. It's beyond just what we could do our own. It takes advantage of the intrinsic structure of human beings and the human mind so that what comes out of us in response to life is more than we could do just through strength of will or skill alone. And from what I've found, when it comes to human beings, there's a few ways of thinking about that sweet spot, but they always come back to some variation on what most people describe as flow states. That state of being in the groove. I went to a jazz concert last night, man. So it's like being in the groove. It's being in the flow, in the zone. It's where you're almost playing beyond yourself. You're responding to life in a way that feels effortless, even if you might be very busy and very engaged in life, because what's happening is a perfectly proportional response to what's going on around you. You're in the moment. And the question that always became to me is, well, how do I find the zone? How do I live more in the zone? How do I find the flow? And I used to be a reverse engineer by trade. So I used to be paid to go in and analyze how things worked and then break them down and how a result was created and then try and create a formula through which people could recreate that result. And so when I used to do that with flow states, I would look at the flow states and we would do things like try and anchor the feeling of the flow state and have somebody visualize themselves running through an activity while in that flow state again and again to create an association between the feeling of the flow state and the activity. I tried things in one of my early books. I wrote about trying to blend there was research that showed that people in flow states described that there was a sort of an optimal balance between their perception of the difficulty of the task at hand and their perception of their ability to meet, that their ability to meet it was either just below or just above the challenge. So I would work with clients, we would work in our seminars on creating and altering our perceptions such that it would create the illusion of flow. And I did all that with a great deal of sincerity because it didn't occur to me that flow was natural. It didn't need to be reverse engineered. It needed to be understood. Flow is our natural state. We are designed to flow. We are designed to operate from a sweet spot. And the sweet spot in a racket is between the top and the bottom, the front and the back. Well, the sweet spot in a human being is between engagement and surrender. So there is a certain spot. Sorry, it's best I got. There's a certain spot between full engagement and absolute surrender where we are able to operate with flow. We are fully engaged in the task at hand, and we are fully surrendered to the hand that guides us. We are in the game, but not of it. We are playing full out with a full recognition that what happens is not actually up to us. We're out of control and full command. And that sweet spot, we find ourselves in it more and more of the time, the more we recognize what's really at play in our lives. So I'm going to share a particular example, and then I'm going to go over to you. So numbers to call 1-866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. 760-944-4300. You'll need to dial your country code before that. I was thinking about this thing that on the show in my work, I call the universal mind. This energy and intelligence behind life, this formless nothingness out of which everything comes. And a friend of mine was describing a video that he and his six-year-old son were watching about a bird catching spider. And this spider, if it's under attack, it rears up on its hind legs and bares its fangs and makes itself really scary, which to certain creatures would be enough to scare them away. But if it doesn't work, what its next move is, it has all these little tiny spikes all over its arms, legs, I don't know what spiders have, and it rubs them together really fast, and it creates like a cloud of these little poison darts in front of it. So that whatever you see this on YouTube, it's really cool. And you just, you know, whatever tries to attack, it gets caught up in this cloud of little poison darts. Almost like I think of it like a skunk spray, but instead of smell, it's physical. Now here's the thing. I can guarantee you that spider never took a Krav Maga self-defense course. I promise you it has not been practicing moves in the mirror, working with a master in the dojo in order to perfect its self-defense technique. It is instinctive. It is built into the intelligence behind the spider, before the spider. All spiders have that in them. That same intelligence, That same instinct is in us as human beings. We are designed for success. We are designed for well-being. We are designed to function perfectly in the world. The problem with us is we have free will. So we can override our instinct. We can talk ourselves in and out of things without any reference to this intelligence. We can function in the world without consciously relying on this deeper intelligence, even though without the deeper intelligence spinning the planet and beating our heart and breathing us, we wouldn't make it very long. Now, when we give ourselves over to this deeper intelligence, when we relax into it, when we start to let it breathe us and think us and live through us more, we operate more and more of the time in that feeling that we call flow, in that sense of being fully engaged and present to the moment, yet no attempt to control anything outside our boat, anything beyond what it is that we actually control. So we're not passive. Well, it's nothing to do with me. You know, if this is what, it's God's will, it's God's will. But we're also not driving the bus. It's like, I wrote in the Inside Out Revolution that it's not so much that, you know, we're, you know, God is our co-pilot. We're God's co-pilot. See, here's another analogy for it. If you're flying an airplane and you technically know how to fly an airplane, you read a manual about how to fly an airplane, maybe you've flown one once, and they go, okay, here you go, here's an airplane. Chances are that if you're the only one there, you're going to do your best. And that's what most of us do. We do our best to fly the airplane, and you know, we might, if we find out it has an autopilot thing, we might try and program the systems of the plane so it can run a lot of the basic activities without us being so actively involved. And we might even get to a point where we feel fairly comfortable as long as there's no turbulence, as long as there's no real surprises, as long as nothing throws us too far off course, we can get comfortable flying the plane. But now, most people, they don't think they're alone in the cockpit. They think that their co-pilot is Bob the homeless guy, right? They think it's their subconscious mind with all its Freudian erogenous weirdness that is going in its self-sabotaging and all these neuroses and things that have to be overcome through more self-help and all of the stuff. And so I've got to fly the plane, because if I don't fly the plane, Bob the homeless guy is going to take over the controls, and then who knows what's going to happen. Now imagine for a minute that it's not on you to fly the plane, but you're in the cockpit. You're there to help. And it's not on Bob the homeless guy to fly the plane, though he's in the cockpit. She's in the cockpit. Bob the homeless woman guy. I don't know. But that there's also a former Air Force personal private jet pilot to billionaires on the plane as well, who was born to fly planes, who knows exactly what to do, who's been flying planes since before you were born and could fly them in his sleep better than you could fly them with all the practice in the world. If that guy was in the cockpit, wouldn't you just kind of let them fly the plane and help out whenever you are needed and enjoy the journey so much more and relax in your seat so much more? Have drinks with Bob the homeless guy. See, that's us. It's not our conscious ego minds that have to be in control. And it's not our subconscious mind that'll take over if we don't keep tight control over it. It's the deeper mind, the intelligence behind life, that starts to live us if we let it. And we find a sweet spot where we're being lived, but we're present. We haven't absented to let life live through us. We've presenced so that life can live through us and we can experience life fully as it does. That's what's on offer. And not only will that give you a much more relaxed experience of life, because it's not on you to fly the plane, not only will that make you more successful, because you're fully present and engaged with the force of the deeper intelligence behind life behind you, but you'll also just do better, have a better experience of it, enjoy life more and do better. It's a win-win. Simply by relaxing into that sweet spot between control and freedom, between surrender and presence. So that's my theme for today. Let's hear from you. Numbers to call 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the US 001-760-944-4300. And we're going to begin today in Pennsylvania with Cassandra. Cassandra, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. It's an honor to have the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a really kind of bad habit, I guess you could say, that when my life starts to get busy, I have difficulty allowing myself to move to a space of peace. I find myself just continually working, and even when I stop working, it's always kind of going on in my mind. Even if I try to meditate or, you know, get a bath and unwind, I notice there's just that slight anxiety kind of under the surface. And so I've had a plan going back into a heavy workload that I was going to try to work more quickly. So that way, because I tend to spend a lot of time on things. And I notice that I'm not moving as quickly as I'd like to. And so I start to feel that anxiety going. And so I'm curious if you have any insights on how to kind of allow yourself to move to a space of peace when there's a lot going on.
Well, so let me mark out a couple of distinctions from within what you're saying and see what pops from those. Because, you know, obviously you are the only person in the world who has ever felt this way. What? Maybe not. Busy is not a function of the world. Busy is a function of the mind. So I remember interviewing Jack Canfield a couple of years ago for one of the Hay House events. And I asked him if he was busy at the moment, and he thought about it, and he said, well, I've got a lot on, but I'm not terribly busy. And I really knew what he meant, because I can feel busy when I've got almost nothing on, and I can not feel busy when I've got a lot on my plate. It really is to do with my state of mind.
So true.
So the first thing that I find helpful is to not think that it's natural to feel stressed out because I have a lot on my plate. Because what it looks like is on my plate is a function of thought. I mean, if you actually broke down what you have on your plate day to day, okay, I'm going to have to breathe. I'm going to have to pick out clothes. I'm going to have to brush my teeth. I'm going to have to create enamel. I'm going to have to, right? I mean, you know, if you actually kind of tried to break down the list at a real level, we all have more on our plate than any human being could possibly handle. But the reality is, that's not really on our plate. That's on the system's plate. That's on the intelligence behind life's plate. All that really has to be on our plate is whatever there is to do right now. And there can't ever be too much to do right now.
Interesting. So does that allow space for, I mean, I know this is kind of a silly question, but for free time, I mean, is that okay when you have a lot to do? I guess there's that guilt that, oh, you know, I could be doing.
So which bits of your time are expensive?
Which what?
Well, you're saying free time like it's different to the, there's other time that isn't free.
Right.
See, that's not what the world looks like to me. So it's like to give you a strategy for managing that world better. It would be like if you walked into my office, threw all the bookshelves and books all over the place, took the furniture, turned it upside down, built like a pile lit a few things on fire and said, okay, how do I get through here? I need a strategy. You're probably better off not doing that to the room first.
My word. So true.
And that's, look, that's just the human dilemma, right? Mm-hmm. We're trained to operate inside the world that we've created out of thought instead of stepping back from it and letting a new, easier to navigate world emerge.
Right. Wow. That helps a lot, actually. I sense that it had something to do with my perception, but it's one of those things where when you're in it, you can't see it as clearly.
No one can. When you're in it, the only thing you can get when you're in it is you can start to get a feel for what it feels like when you're in it. And that becomes your wake up call, your alarm clock. To step back from it instead of trying to push even harder through it.
Yeah.
But when you're in it, you're in it. You know, if there's mud on your glasses, there's mud on your glasses. And until the mud comes off your glasses, you're just going to find it hard to see.
Definitely. Wow. Thank you.
Very cool, Cassandra.
Immensely. You helped me a ton, actually. Thank you so much, Michael.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, it's just a truth about the human condition. We create our experience via thought. And if we don't know that, we think we've got to deal with our experience. I've got to handle this. I've got to do something about this. Well, sometimes, I'm not suggesting there aren't logistics in life that need to be handled, because it seems to me there absolutely are. But as soon as it starts seeming like a big deal, the big dealness of it is absolutely to do with how you created it. It's like a friend of mine once said, is if you're in a car and it's only firing on two cylinders, everything you drive over is going to feel like a hill. If you're in a car with like a 16 cylinder engine and a huge engine, you can go up things that look like hills to other people and it doesn't feel like anything to you. We're all in a 16 cylinder car. But we get caught up in a way that we try and take our challenges on with only two cylinders firing. We create the obstacle course and then we try and get advice about running it. You don't have to make it up that way. You don't have to think it that way. And it's not that you should think it this way instead of that way. Simply seeing you have the option of waiting for another movie to come on. Of operating inside a different world. And then you can just walk through it. And that's what creates that feeling of flow, is that you're not up against anything that you can't handle. Let's go to San Diego and let's speak with, I'm going to try here. Is it Kuka?
Yeah.
Hello. What are we going to talk about today, Kuka?
Well, you know, I feel like I'm kind of going through a personal transformation right now. Now,
is that a euphemism for something awful, or is that a good thing?
No, I don't think it's something awful, but I feel like I'm going into a different chapter of my life and certain things start ending. Mm-hmm. And I'm like beginning anew. I'm kind of like re-imaging myself. But I'm frustrated because I understand what you're saying, that, you know, I think a lot of us have a problem. We have to control everything. We have to be in control. So where's the fine line between controlling and doing what needs to be done versus, you know, just surrendering?
Well, and it's the perfect question for today, because that's exactly what we're exploring today. So for you, what is it that you think that you're surrendering to when you surrender?
I guess surrendering to a higher power.
Okay.
Although I know what I want, but maybe that's not what's best for me or what's in my plan.
So Is that for something for you that at the deepest level you can find in yourself? Is that something that is a sometimes comforting, sometimes frustrating idea, or does that seem true to you that there is some kind of a higher power with a higher plan?
I truly believe there's a higher power. I truly believe there is a plan for me. It's frustrating, though. It is. It can be frustrating. Mm-hmm.
No, I know. I get that. But only up to a point. Like, I will get frustrated, but it doesn't seem to me like, you know, for I've got a friend who always says, look, getting frustrated with the way life is, getting frustrated with, in this case, a higher plan for your life is like a busboy complaining about dishes.
Right?
That's just the gig. Right? If there is a higher plan for our life, there's a higher plan for our life, and we can ease into it, we can enjoy it, we can fight it, but if there is one, there just is one. And it doesn't really care whether we enjoy it or not. So we may as well enjoy it, or not. So I guess the question is, what is it, as I'm listening to you, what is it that you think you're supposed to be controlling? Because, like, it seems to me, well, okay, there's my line. There's a higher plan, so I'm going to do what I know to do. And if things aren't working, then things aren't working, and that's part of the higher plan. And great, I'm still going to do what I know to do.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that. You know, it's like I kind of feel like, you know, you do what you can with, you know, your inner voice that tells you. And you do what you can, and you try to go in the path that you feel you need to go. But if that path isn't working out, or there's challenges or obstacles, it's kind of like at some point, I think I just have to say, okay, where do I go from here? Is there a different route? Is there a different thing? Is there something else?
So let me ask you a slightly different question, Kuka. Is there ever a point that you can imagine where there's a better plan than doing what you know to do in the moment?
Oh, absolutely. I know there's something better.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. How can there be something better than what you know to do in the moment? Like, can you give me an example of that? Because I can't actually imagine that.
I could be doing something that I enjoy, like being on vacation, being in a Caribbean island, enjoying myself.
Okay. Could you be on a Caribbean island enjoying yourself right now?
At this moment, no.
Okay, perfect. So that's not what I'm talking about.
That's
a place you'd rather be. I'm talking about, can there ever be a better plan in the moment than what you know to do in the moment?
No, because that reality is I'm present at the moment right here.
And that's all surrender means to me. Surrendering is surrendering to reality.
I understand that because for a while there, I thought I was kind of getting the wrong idea. I'm thinking, well, nobody's ever going to try anything everybody's going to give up and just say, oh, okay, I surrender. So now that you said that, that resonates with me. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate word in some ways because it does have the connotation of defeat.
Correct.
And it's not defeat, surrender. It's giving up the fight, but it's like giving up the fight, you know, Don Quixote tilting at windmills. It's like, I've decided to let the windmills win.
Right.
Nobody loses when the windmills win.
Okay. Yeah, I was getting the wrong impression. I was thinking, you know, I'll just surrender everything and just let everything go and let it be. And I'm like, okay, so where do you draw that line? Because to a certain extent, you just answered it for me right now. You have to live in the present moment.
Yeah.
The present moment is reality, and that's it. It is what it is.
Yeah. If there's something you're surrendering, it's the illusion of a past, a future, and control.
Always the unknown. That's so I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and see, I love the unknown. I mean, I get that not everyone does, but it's like that's where all the action is. That's where all the learning is. That's where all the freshness is in life.
So why do some people like myself, or why do we have anxiety, or why do we worry about the future when really, like you said, sometimes you don't have any control over it?
Well, because you haven't, the penny hasn't really dropped yet. You kind of intellectually know, and I'm not just talking you, but anyone
right.
who's particularly plagued with anxiety, the penny hasn't really dropped yet that there are things in life that you can control and there are things in life that you can't control. And
right.
and when you start to see the difference between the two, your life gets better. You know, I was talking to somebody just this week who got diagnosed with a potentially fatal illness, and they're okay. They're okay now. But they were talking with another person who had been diagnosed with the same illness, but was not yet okay. And they said, you know what she said was, she said, I have spent my whole life hanging on to the edge of the cliff by my fingernails to try and stay safe and secure and okay and healthy. And it didn't work. I got sick anyways. And what that's taught me is there's really no point in clinging to the edge of the cliff by my fingernails anymore. There's just no point in being that afraid because it didn't keep me safe.
So then what do you put hope in there then? What does hope come in there? Because if that's the case, then, like you said, then everybody will just surrender to an illness. But where is that?
Well, you're not surrendering to the illness. You're surrendering to the present moment.
Okay.
Because illnesses come and go. So the woman who I was talking to, she wasn't ill anymore. But she also wasn't clinging to health. See, in the flow of life, there will be times of illness and times of health, times of poverty and times of wealth, relatively
correct.
Speaking. Right? Uh-huh. That's just the flow of life. So on the one hand, we say we want to live in the flow, but on the other hand, we only want to live in the flow if we only have health and only have wealth and only have this and only have that. Well, that's not how life flows.
That's correct. You hit it. You're right, because I think when we're not living in abundance, in health, in this and that, that's when people start losing hope.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it's not good. But like you said, there's always good with bad.
Yeah. So listen, Kuga, here's what I want to do. I've got a new program starting this weekend, a 12-week program called Living from Mind, which is an online program where we are exploring these ideas in greater detail. If you stay on the line and give your details to the guys in studio, we'll give you a free place on our program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for taking my call and for taking the time.
You're very welcome. So, you know, let me just speak to that a little bit more because what Kuga was talking about there, you know, this is really the heart of it. This is why we're afraid to surrender, because we think we're surrendering something we have. We're not surrendering to an outcome. We're not surrendering to a result. We're not surrendering to a disease. We're not surrendering to a path. We're surrendering the illusion that we're in control. We're surrendering the illusion that what we see is all there is. We're surrendering the illusion that we know what's going to happen next. And that, it's a very different thing to let go of what you don't have than it is to let, like if I ask you right now, hey, just let go of that $1 billion. Well, that's probably not that hard for you because you don't have $1 billion unless you do, in which case, bad example. But if I ask you to let go of all the money in your wallet, well, that feels like something. It's like, well, hang on, this is my money. I mean, so we're not talking about surrendering your strength, surrendering the joy in life surrendering possibility. We're just talking about surrendering illusion. And that's not really surrendering at all. Let's go to Indianapolis and speak with Carrie. Carrie, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. First, I want to say I've learned so much from you, and I appreciate it. I've been a student of the three principles, and it's helped me tremendously in my life. And the thing that I still get caught in, and it seems like this is what you're addressing in today's show, is this space between surrender and engagement. And I get caught in this thought process of, well, aren't I just denying my problems or avoiding, not dealing with? And it sort of keeps me on the hamster's wheel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean,
that makes sense?
I think it does. You're going to tell me if it made sense when I tell you what I think you just said.
Okay.
When it seems like something for you to do, like on my to-do list today is, film a video, read a passage of Kierkegaard so I can speak with my daughter and surrender. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, well, I need to know how to surrender, and I need to know when to surrender, and I need to know when not to surrender. And in other words, it creates a bunch of noise in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But surrender is just a word that I'm trying to use to describe there being less of you in the equation. Right? Less of the character Carrie, mm-hmm. less of the character Michael. See, surrender is a way of describing the disappearance of the separate self, the dissolution of the ego, the kicking Bob the homeless guy out of the cockpit of the airplane. So in a funny way, surrender is not something to do. It's a way of talking about something that happens when you stop trying to assert your personal will onto life.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is in reality, what I have found is in reality, the less I try to dominate life, the more powerful I become, because I become a vehicle for life. I become a conduit for this universal energy. I become the plane that life flies. I become the servant of an awesome master. Not in a demeaning way, not in a servile way, but in a, the guy, okay, this is a really weird analogy, but it's the one that came to me. The guy who goes to deliver messages for the big mafia boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's just an ordinary guy, but everybody listens to him like he's really important. But if he starts thinking he's really important, he's going to get into trouble. See, that's
right.
Us. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're messenger boys, messenger women for a higher power, for a deeper intelligence. And we can do amazing things. We can move mountains in that role. But if we start thinking it's our power that's moving the mountains, we're going to get into trouble. Because we don't have that power. That's not us as separate individuals. It's our role as a messenger for the divine.
Right.
What are you hearing?
Well, what came to me, and I'm not sure I can connect the dots so well, but what came to me is it's about being attached to the outcome. Which is about thinking that I'm steering the boat, flying the plane, whatever. And that's where the that's where I get hooked with thinking that denial or avoiding is letting go of the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm. See, which if is, you were
which
really...
Is, which is, yeah. Which is not real to begin with.
Yeah, it's like letting go of the steering wheel on a car ride at Disney that's on rails.
Right. Yeah.
It's like that's not irresponsible. That's sensible.
Smart. Right. Yeah. Well, I think for me, where I get caught up is that in my life, I have tried to find peace of mind through avoiding, denying, sometimes not dealing with, and then thinking that almost like a feeling of numbness was peace of mind. What I lose in that is that whatever it is that's going on never moves forward or gets resolved, because it blocks me from being in touch with my wisdom.
See, this is where the feeling is really our friend. Peace of mind can't feel like numbness. Those are opposite ends of a scale.
Right.
Peace of mind feels amazing. Numbness does not. Right. And that's kind of, see, the feeling is what lets us know if we're on track or off track.
Mm-hmm.
You start to get a feel for the flow of life coming through you. It would be, I sometimes think of it as if a wire could feel the electricity coming through it, as opposed to a wire where there's nothing coming through it.
Right.
Right. That's the numbness is the wire with nothing coming through it.
Mm-hmm.
Peace of mind, aliveness, engagement. That's the divine coming through us, the energy of life coming through us. And when the energy of life is coming through you, you may or may not be doing a lot or a little in any given moment, but you'll be doing what there is to do in that moment. And it's pretty foolproof, right? If you're feeling numb and dead and blah, probably in that moment you're not flowing. You're not engaged. You're not surrendered. You're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And the second you get back into movement, you start allowing for a movement of thought and a movement of the body or just whatever the movement is, boom, you're right back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a kink in a hose. That would be another way of thinking about it. It's not that the water stopped flowing, but if there's a kink in the hose, nothing's coming out and it just gets more and more uncomfortable. And if you've got a lot of kinks in the hose, well, then it's, you know, but each time you let go of the idea that you're the prime mover, that's like another kink in the hose gets undone and more of this water from source starts coming through. And when the hose is unkinked, which is its natural state, the water can flow through as powerfully as it needs to or as gently as it wants to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that sometimes when I am dealing with a lot of stress in my life, that I think that like it's almost noble, you know, to take on stress and be able to handle stress, and you know, it's more about, you know, plowing through it and remaining calm through it. And I'm beginning to see that sometimes those feelings that you that you're feeling when you're under stress are indications to you that you need to quiet down and listen to what the next step is.
And that, Carrie, is your wisdom coming through.
Yeah.
And that, so thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
And let me just go on with that a little bit for you listening, because See, what I was trying to get at a little bit with Kuka and with Carrie is we can rely on our wisdom being available to us when we need it. Wisdom is real time. It's in the moment. It's responsive to what I need when I need it. I'll know what to do when I need to know what to do. That's just the way this flow of information, this flow of intelligence seems to work. So trying to work out in advance what I'll do if this and what I'll do if that and what to do in this variation and what to do in that variation may comfort me, but it's not, generally speaking, terribly helpful, because in the moment, something will occur to me to do. And if you start to look to see for yourself if that's true in your life, I promise you, you'll find that it is. Because it has been in any person that I've spent any time with looking. They see, boy, at some point I just knew what to do. At some point I just saw it differently. At some point it occurred to me that I could do this instead, or that I really, it was time to pull back. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. We were talking about, you know, our teenage kids and how much time they spend online. And I pointed out that I was quite surprised when my kids started monitoring their own internet use, you know, because for a while we had house rules about it and did all that. And at one point, you know, I mentioned to my son, who was probably 14, 15 at the time, you know, hey, you know, I noticed you've not been on your computer very much. And he said, yeah, I deleted my Facebook. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, I was just spending too much time on it. And it was really interesting because I thought, oh, of course, he's got that wisdom too. It's just normally he'd never had to act on it because we were too busy shutting it down before it could kick in. We were making up what was too much. Whereas when it was really too much, he stopped. And that is in us. And it's in all of us. The only difference between somebody who's found that sweet spot and lives from that more of the time and somebody who hasn't yet found that sweet spot is how much do they trust it? How much do you trust that that wisdom will be there when you need it and not hang on to the edge of the cliff by your fingernails just in case it doesn't? Not collect a toolbox full of 1,000 tools just in case the well spring of fresh ideas isn't there when you need it. And the more you go to the well, the more faith you have in the well, because that's how it works. Every time you go down and there's fresh water, you just stop worrying about whether or not there'll be fresh water the next time. And if it ever feels like there isn't fresh water, that's always because you're not really going to the well. You're going back up into your head, back up into your thinking, back up into your ideas of how you should live. Well, I should surrender more, or I should engage more. And you've lost touch with the moment. But that's fine, because the moment hasn't gone anywhere. You have. And the second you regain your bearings, the second you find your way back home, you'll find that if there's still anything that needs to be done, you'll just do it. And if there isn't, maybe you'll smile a little bit at yourself for having been so caught up and move forward. Should we sneak one more in? Let's talk to Christine in Dallas. Christine, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Are you on, Michael?
I am. You are too, in fact. We're both on.
Oh my God. How cool. Thank you.
What's on your mind? What are we going to talk about today?
Well, the question I have for you, I'm listening to the show and I'm loving what all the questions and what's going on. My question for you is, could you talk to me a little bit about setting goals and intentions versus pushing your agenda too much? And how does that relate to, like, surrendering? Because I've kind of come to a point in my life where I've cleared out a lot of spooky stuff, and so I'm kind of ready for some new stuff, and I'd like to set some goals and ambitions, but I want to be open to what the universe wants to bring to me. So how do you find that balance?
Well, When you talk about wanting to set some goals and ambitions, is there something that you really want to do that you're not doing, or is it just that you think it would be good to do something?
I think it would be good for me to push myself more and express myself more and just be a little more of who I am. Just, you know.
So if I had a red flag button that I could press, and like a big red flag would pop up and warning lights would shine and go, woo, 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 right? It would go off whenever somebody said, you know, I think it would be good for me if. And the reason being that as soon as you separate out into problem child and good parent, you know, who's going to take care of the problem child and help them do what's good for them.
Right.
You've gone into the world of personality and ego and neurosis and psychology. And it's just a great big can of worms. Now, we have psychologies. All of us do. We've got a course. I'm going to be doing a course in LA in October called Beyond Psychology, where we're going to talk about this more. The fact that we have a psychology does not mean that we have to try to live from it or through it. We have something in us that is beyond psychology, that was there before our individual unique psychology got developed. That's the space that I'm pointing to when I talk about surrender. And so, look, of course, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be happier. There's nothing wrong with wanting to have a richer life. There's nothing wrong with wanting to do things in the world. But the truth for me, and I can only share at this level, the truth for me, is that if I'm really happy and I love my life, then the only goal that would make much sense to set is to be really happy and love my life, which doesn't really have to be a goal because I already am. Now, from this place of happiness and well-being and loving my life, it may occur to me to do some things, and then I can do them. It may occur to me to go, hey, I'd like to run a marathon, and then go about doing the things that would let me run a marathon. It may occur to me that there's a particular business idea I want to run with and see where it takes me. But that's different to setting goals to make yourself a better person or that require you to be a better person. Goals that are effectively about you instead of about what it is that you'd like to see come into the world for its own sake. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting to me, because what I am getting from you is more of, and this is something that comes up with me a lot, is the spiritual versus the physicalness of being really here in life. And then the spiritual, what you're talking about is more of a spiritual aspect, in my opinion, from what I'm gathering from what you're saying. It's just, I'm seeing that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I tell you what, Christine, you've snuck in under the wire as well. Stay on the line. We're going to get you on Living from Mind as well.
Okay.
All right, we're going to get your information. Just stay on the line, talk to the guys. And for those of you listening, let me just share a couple of really quick things. If you want to keep this conversation going, you can always do it on Facebook, facebook.com/mneil. Go to supercoach.com. We have three courses starting this weekend, one on business called The Entrepreneurial Advantage, and then two courses for everybody, one called Living from the Inside Out and one called Living from Mind. And you can find them both on the front page at supercoach.com. And they're both programs, 12-week programs online, designed to take this exploration deeper. And if you've enjoyed the conversation today, I think you'll very much enjoy those programs. Last thing I'm supposed to talk about today. Oh, I remember. I do this program called Supercoach Academy, and it is amazing. And Living from Mind and Living from the Inside Out are included in that program. So you can learn more about that at supercoachacademy.com. I'm really glad to be back live in studio. I'm really glad to be back with you. I'm looking forward to a whole month of live shows coming up. So until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.